What Le Crack de Barral are you like wandering into? They have like Nines Morrison chess out. Hello, sir. Welcome to Le Crack de Barral.
Greetings and salutations, board game fans. The Dice Pirates are back. This is episode 40. We're bringing you another triple header with a mild spooky theme. You know, it's getting to October, and maybe we'll do some more, but, you know, a little bit going on there. Of course, I am your captain, Ian, as always, joined by Matt and Aaron. How are you guys doing?
Hi, hi.
I'm feeling mildly spooky. Not fully spooky, but, like, mildly spooky.
Not fully spooky yet. It builds up as the month goes on.
It crescendos.
Of course, we're going to jump right into our soapboxes. And I actually wanted to, kind of a semi-soapbox. Matt, I wanted to just ask you a question.
Sure.
Real quick. When you, what is it you like about rolling dice? What is it about the experience that you enjoy?
I like the sound that it makes. That's the first thing that comes to mind.
I like clackiness.
I like the fact that they roll. I like when they hit and they bounce around and jostle and I don't know what's going to come up. So it's like, ooh, tension, excitement. I like the way they feel in your hand, especially if they're chunky dice or better than little dice. Ooh, don't give me a tiny undersized D6. That's the worst. Any board game that does like a...
This little 10
yeah,
mil.
Don't give me that. I want... You know, in a perfect world, I want big wingspan-sized dice with round corners.
So you like the suspense of it, and you like the feel, that the sort of the actual...
The sensory feeling and the suspense
it.
Of dice. Those are all the things I like about dice.
Okay. And so the reason I'm asking this question is because I wanted to just kind of quickly talk about an interesting Kickstarter that came out recently. It's called Flip Die. And it is a... collection is a it is a group of coins that have been created to essentially function like dice. And if you go to this Kickstarter, that you can check it out, you can get like the full set, d20, d4, d6, d8, d10. They have the full gamut of various things, and it's set up as a coin, but inside the coin it's actually hollow. There's a little ball bearing, and so when you flip the coin, the inside is sloped so that a little ball bearing will show up on the exterior. And the exterior, depending on which coin it is, it's either a d4 or a d6, there will be, you know, that number on the outside, and wherever the ball bearing shows up is the number you got. So it's the coin that is a die, actually, which is an odd concept. They are gorgeous. They look amazing. I mean, they're, you know, amazing metal that has been put together. They look beautiful. The designs on the coins are incredible. I mean, as like a product, they put a lot of effort into it. I have been going back and forth. My wife and Ashley was like, hey, do you want me to ask your family to back this as a gift for you for like Christmas or something like that? And I was like, do I? I can't decide, because on the one hand, they look beautiful, right? They look amazing. But on the other hand, I imagine myself throwing these coins onto the table, and for some reason, I don't think it's going to be satisfying the same way that rolling a handful of dice is. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm looking at them now. You just today I learned about these real time on the show. I want to be mad at them somehow. My instinct is to recoil from these because it's strange and different.
And see, I have the opposite direction. I am someone who loves, like, I'm already a dice goblin. So anytime I'm presented with a set of dice,
okay,
that's
now
like,
that's what I'm changing your contact in my phone. Dice goblin. Hold on.
So anytime I'm presented with like weird dice that are operate some way other than, there's another die, I don't know if it's on Kickstarter yet or the campaign's upcoming, but they are, it's not quite a spinner in the way like a life spinner or a board game spinner. It's a set of ball bearings with a giant ball on top, and you give that a spin, and then the other ones spin around kind of like a planetary gear, and then wherever it stops is your roll. and you get two of them, and that will represent your standard seven piece die set. And like, it's just a toy. I don't even play in an RPG, and if I did at this point, it'd probably be online. So like, I have zero need for real dice. But I love a weird die, and I've been following this campaign since it was just a guy on TikTok showing off like early models that he had
Oh, the
made.
flip
And
die?
yes, and it
Okay.
is. I love a weird die. I like it's. I mean, it's a metal coin, which is already a nice
Sure.
thing to hold and feel. And then there's a little ball bearing in there that's gonna click clack around in a fun way. And then that's also the dice. Like,
I think Aaron has
very
like sold
exciting.
me on this. I'm on board for this.
Well, it's different, but also like I mean, obviously, like you said, they are amazing. What I wonder though is like, because I love when you roll die, and there's that last second where you kind of see what it might be, but is it going to tip one more time? Does it roll that little bit further? But with this, you throw the
It
coin
lands.
and it
It
falls,
just.
and some of them, it matters what side it lands. Like on the D4, it doesn't matter what side it lands on. Either side you throw it
It's
on,
got the four.
it's all four sides. The D6. It has 1, 2, 3 on one side, 4, 5, 6 on the other. So it does matter what side it lands on. But then after it drops, then you're waiting for the ball bearing to show up. And for me, that's almost anticlimactic. Like, it's not what I like. I left rolling my dice and it's like, here what I have. Here I roll my coins. All right, wait.
Okay.
All right,
I'm
now I know what it
actually
is. You know
here's
what I
the
mean?
here's where these are gonna go awry. Okay, on the one hand, I think these are great because it's like when you think about kind of the weight of it in your hand, it looks like it would feel really good to like hold like an oversized coin, like like games that have like heavy metal coins and they just like feel good. But here's the where the fantasy of this goes wrong. If you look on the Kickstarter, there's a GIF of it says easy to use and there's a hand like thumping it up and like perfectly catching it in their palm and being able to like read the result. And in your real life, you're gonna be at the table with your friends being like, all right, let's see if that attack against that goblin hit, thump it up into the air and it flies off to the left, clatters down, rolls under the couch, and you've got to go get it. It's gonna be a disaster, actually. I think actually using it is gonna be a little clunky because you do gotta like be able to thump this thing up into the air and get a good end over end flip. And then either catch it or have it land on the table where it's gonna be like really loud. I think the fantasy of these is actually gonna be kind of like those really heavy metal dice that you don't actually end up wanting to use because when you they're just so loud and they don't really roll, they just kind of go clunk and they're just they're there. But they are really cool. I do like the idea though of just people trying to find other ways to do like a random number generation at the table that. We're so deep into the hobby now. It's just like standard dice isn't even like exciting anymore. We're way far in, guys.
How can we just abstract it even more? No, that's cool. I mean, so there, I mean, it is. It's gonna wrap up on October 28th, so you know, I got time to decide. But yeah, I just wanted to run it by because it's an odd one.
It's
It's
a
an odd one
wild
for
one. It
sure.
is kind of fun. I would not at all be upset if these showed up as a gift. I don't know if I would buy these, but if anybody on the internet wants to send these to me, I would accept them. I would use them.
I would just also like to say, in an era where Kickstarters are getting outrageously priced and things are getting crazy expensive, a full set of them is $100. But considering, like, they're solid metal that have to be custom milled and fused together, and then the ball bearing, like.
Yeah, they give you a neoprene mat and a carrying case with $100, which is the better deal because otherwise it costs $25 for a single coin, and you get seven if you pay $100. So why would you ever do that? But you know, so yeah, so lots of interesting stuff on that one. Matt, I know you have a soapbox you wanted to bring us as well. What do you got going on?
I played a new game, guys. It's a hot new game. It's only about 2,000 years old, so I'm coming to it a little late, but I'm excited to have played it. It's called Nine Men's Morris, and it's not about men or Morris. It is a very old strategy game that I played, that you may have played out there listening world many times in your life. It's not an uncommon old game, and it occasionally shows up on like the reverse side of a checkerboard or something. It's a
Or if you've
classic.
ever been to like a Cracker Barrel, it's probably one of the games they have on the table that you can play while
No,
you're
not at
waiting
a
for your
Cracker Barrel.
food,
This
you
is
know.
Have you been to a Cracker Barrel?
I've been to many Cracker Barrels. What lowbrow Cracker Barrels are you going to?
What highbrow Cracker Barrels are you going to?
This is way too advanced for the Cracker Barrel audience.
What Cracker de Barrel are you like wandering into? They have like Ninesman, Morris, and Chess out. Hello, sir. Welcome to La Cracker Barrel.
But you can play this game with Peg. Anyway, continue. I don't mean to take over your soapbox.
Oh, no, that's hilarious. So the backstory of this is my oldest stepson, Riley, is at college, and he's taking a game design class, and they have been studying the history of games. And he has been coming to me with all of these really old historical games throughout history that they are learning the origins of. And, of course, obviously, there's chess, Go. There's the real classics, the bangers. But it's also, you know, been learning about like ancient Egyptian Senet and a few other games that have like hung around over the years, or some that are rarely played or almost forgotten about. But I'd never heard of Nine Men's Morris. And he showed up at the house the other day and was like, we got to play this. And he drew out the little grid that you play on a piece of paper. And we played it with checkers. You know, and it's a really fun and cool game if you never played it. It's basically somewhere in complexity between checkers and chess. It's the basic thing of like moving pieces around, trying to take your opponent's pieces. But it's got a totally different mechanic than anything that I have ever encountered before. And the puzzle of it like sucked me right in. You play it on a grid that's basically three squares inside each other. So you draw like one large square, put another square inside that, and then a smaller square inside the center one. And then at the points of the corners, there's dots, and in the center of each line of each square, there's a dot. So every square has 8 points on it, and you create points of intersection, like where they are at. So in the phase one, it's a little hard to like visualize that, but if you just Google a Ninesman's Morris grid, like you'll see what I'm talking about. But the basic setup of the game is in phase one, you can place your pieces anywhere on any point. No rules about placement. If at any point you manage to get three adjacent pieces along three connected points, they're locked in, and you can at that point take one of your opponent's pieces off the board. And so you're trying to stop your opponent from getting a three in place. Once everyone's done their initial placement of placing their little units down, then you go into a second phase where the rules change, and now you slide down paths to any open space, continuing to still try to make sections of three, so that when you do that, your three guys are locked in and can't be removed even when your opponent makes a section of three. So it's basically like you're trying to create like little formations of troops that are defended and pick off your opponent's like vulnerable pieces and you just play keeps going until someone just has two pieces left, in which case you can't form a section of three anymore, so you're done. Or if there's no more valid plays, like whoever has scored the most. It's a really fast game. It takes like 15, 20 minutes to play through a round. You can play a bunch of times in a row once you kind of get the basic rules of it. It was a blast. It's like the most fun I've had with a simple traditional board game like that in a long time. And you could play it at home just by stealing the pieces from your checker set and just drawing out the grid. It's a blast. Some people hearing this may be laughing because they grew up playing this. I think it's more common still in Europe to like still play it. I grew up in the southern U.S. I never even heard of this. So it completely blew my mind. But the other part of this, other than just it's a fun game that you should try, because it has these two distinct phases that are really interesting how they interact with each other. But the other thing that struck me about it is this is a 2,000-year-old game that's still really, really good. And it's just funny to think about how long we've been playing games as a culture, mm-hmm. how long there have been board game nerds. I mean, there are Nine Men's Morris boards scratched onto like ancient pottery that have been found in like Mycenae. I mean, it's wild when you think about how long we've been trying to like make games, and the game still has this thematic quality of a battle and like units. We call it Nine Men's Morris, but there's some theory that it's related to the Latin word for soldier. So even like as early as like the Roman times, we were making thematic war games out of just like whatever little materials people could like scrawl together. And I find that fascinating how the hobby has changed and hasn't changed. You know, like this game is not it could be made today in some ways, like the basic ideas that are still in it, you know, like it still feels really fresh. So, Nine Men's Morris, you should play it. It's really cool. It's a part of gaming history.
Yeah, it may or may not be at your local Cracker Barrel.
It will not be your local Cracker
It
Barrel.
won't be, but if you own Clubhouse Games for the Nintendo Switch, I know that that is one of the included titles on that.
Has either of you guys have played this?
Yes, no, I have played this,
I have
and then,
played
like you
it,
can.
not enough to like I'm not good at it.
Oh,
Yeah,
it's
no, I haven't
really
played
hard to
this
get
before.
good
Like
at it.
I've played versions like where you know where the pegs instead of like you know tokens and stuff like that, just to keep it from falling out. If you don't like, you know, you can take it to go, one of those quick games you can play. It's really fun.
Well, it's really cool because it's like the two distinct phases. In the one, you're trying to like place your units, but you can like get them stuck around the outer grid and they can't.
Yeah.
In the second
Well, it's
phase
almost
where
like
you're,
tic-tac-toe in the first stage, you know, where you're trying
it's
to
almost like
like block each
tic-tac-toe, and then it
other
turns
and
into this little like movement puzzle game of
yeah.
trying to get your pieces down into position to like lock them in. And it's one of those like solved games, which is a whole fascinating Wikipedia hole to go down, the idea
Oh
of
yeah.
games that
Yes.
there is a 100% optimal way to play it and win it consistently or cause it to result in a draw if both players know exactly what they're doing. So yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun, and it is cool thinking about the long and strange history of board games.
We'll have to play some of those games and maybe even do an episode on like some of those classic, you know, that game, Mancala, stuff like that, you know. Be really fun to kind of dive more into the history of, you know, even more so of the, you know, modern but ancient history of games. That'd be really fun.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other thing I thought I kept thinking about with it is, and it's funny making this point after talking about those crazy dice, is like how little you really need to have a fun time with a board game.
Yeah.
You know,
Honestly, yeah.
we've made the hobby like so complicated, but like you could draw this grid out in the sand and have like two slightly different shades of rocks, and that's how people played it and had a really fun time for 1,000 years. You know,
Absolutely.
it's not that. You don't need that much, really, to have a good time. If you have a set of rules that's like conducive to like fun strategy and sparking your imagination, then that's all you need.
It really is. Speaking of sparking the imagination, we are going to go into Bitter Board Gamers. We're going to meet some people who did not have that spark and did not get the point of the game they were playing. I'm going to read you guys a couple one-star reviews, and you guys are going to try and guess what game I'm talking about. You guys ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
Let's party.
King of Tokyo with more plastic? I don't care for King of Tokyo. I didn't care for this.
King of Tokyo with more plastic. So minis
Yeah.
and dice.
It's definitely a CMON game.
I mean, like my initially, I'm like Zombicide. That doesn't really. It's not King of Tokyo at
No,
all. But
but
it's
maybe.
a pile of plastic and a bunch of dice.
King of Tokyo with more dice or with more plastic.
Trying to think of like games that have re-implemented
Well, this
King of
is
Tokyo.
okay. I'm predicting it. I'm gonna go on a limb here, and so I'm not making a guess yet, but I'm gonna say this game does not actually play like King of Tokyo. It's one of those things where somebody's just saying because it involves dice and a little bit of randomness, it's like King of Tokyo. This game's like King of Tokyo.
You're not altogether wrong. You guys want another review?
I do.
Yes.
All right, here we go. This game was a big disappointment. I tried to make myself like it, but after three plays, it was clear I wasn't going to enjoy it. I was so excited when I saw the awesome miniatures and colorful dice, but that's where the excitement ended for me. The game tried to utilize Yahtzee mechanisms in a battle game, but it failed. The rules were so unclear. You never know quite if you're playing the right way, especially when you're playing cards. Everything's just unexplained. Feels like CMON just threw this one together and rushed it without any playtesting or proofreading at all. I
These
like the
people are.
concept. I like the concept, but it was just boring when we actually played. Doesn't really seem to matter where you move or how you fight. I sold it, and I don't get rid of games very often.
These people are horribly wrong, and I refuse to accept this slander against the brilliant title that is the correct answer, Gekkaido Bot Battles.
No.
It is, in fact, Gekkaido Bot
What?
Battles.
It is?
How could you not like that game? That game is so good!
I didn't want to believe it. No one who's played Gekkaido could be that mad about Gekkaido.
And honestly, that second review, it seemed like a long one. I actually trimmed that down a bit. It went on about twice as long as what I actually read.
That review is longer than a game of Gekkaido.
Yeah. No, that game is so fun, though. I've talked about this before. I feel like early on, actually, I gave a bit of a defense of this game, but I think it's a really fun game that a lot of people overlooked.
Oh yeah, it's a total hidden gem. It is one of those games where I think the King of Tokyo comparison is probably closer in this than I was giving it some credit for, but it's still not really King of Tokyo. It's much more tactical and strategic than that game.
Yes.
And it's just better. It's just cooler. It's got a fun aesthetic. It's robots fighting each other. It's very solid. And they have great pre-painted awesome minis, but that's also the that was also the game's doom. And we've talked about it before. It was just way
Yeah.
too expensive back in the day.
It was $60 for a, I mean, you can play it more complicated, but it is at its heart a family weight game that caps out at four and does have a little bit of rules you need to learn. But like, it's so good, and those people are fools for thinking it's a bad game.
It really is fantastic. It's what, $30 on eBay now, We are going to go ahead and move on to our second game. This one, I don't know. We'll see how hard it is. I'm going to go ahead and give you your first review. Simultaneous action selection of like 10 options paired with opponent selection. Oh, you played the right card to counter an opponent, but they did too, and their color is just randomly better than yours. Tough luck. Yuck.
Their color is better than yours. Simultaneous action selection.
Wait, what? This is not ringing a bell. I felt the last time we played Bitter Board Gamers, I was so on it, and this one I'm
You
like,
are killing it. Yeah, no,
yeah.
this time I'm going to go ahead and give you your second review, and pretty sure this one's probably going to give it away.
Okay.
A mediocre original, but now it's in the sky and with furries? No thanks.
yeah, it's the pirates of the
Oh,
thing, Libertalia.
Libertalia.
The Pirates of
Libertalia.
Furfest.
So it's what's interesting about that those reviews is the first one, like those are reviews from different editions of the game, because in the first edition it did have that issue where your player color meant that sometimes your card was better than your opponent's card, and there was no two ways around that. So that was how, if there was ever a tie for two people having played the same card, the tie was resolved by player color, and it wasn't balanced, so some colors were objectively better than other colors because of the way the ties broke. But
They did
the.
update that a bit with the new one. However, I will say both of these reviews were actually taken from the re-release. So
Really?
this person either just copied their review
That's,
or
yeah.
they did not understand the game.
Yeah, I don't
That's,
remember the
yeah.
color thing. I do remember I did, I liked this game but didn't love it. I can get on board with some decent criticism of this. It did feel like it has some gotcha like elements to it that kind of make it a bummer. Like I felt like there were moments where you just wanted to do something and you were just like totally shut down on your turn because your opponent just played the right thing right then and just bam. So it's a little bit unsatisfying. It didn't help that I think I like misunderstood like several key. I can't remember the exact details. This is an unsatisfying anecdote on a thing, but it was just one of those games where some part of the rules didn't click in my head and I was struggling the whole time. And we played it the full player count. We played a big game of this. What was it, like 6 or 8 people
We
had going?
played with six
Six, yeah.
people, the max we could play with actually, and
Yeah, it
I
was
enjoyed it
different.
more than I enjoyed any other game I'd played of it before. It's fun, but it does have its issues.
I would definitely play it again. I didn't like hate it, but I was just like, ooh, there's some parts of it that were rough. It was unsatisfying.
So that is Bitter Board Gamers. We're going to go ahead and move on to our main discussion. As always, we will be right back with that in just a second.
Alrighty, and welcome back to the Dice Pirates, where we're going to go ahead and dive into our main topic. And this week, look, folks, I'll be honest with you. A lot of times we try to at least have some kind of thematic cohesion between the games, even when we do a triple header. But this week, It's potpourri. It's just a mix of random stuff that we wanted to talk about, and I defy you to create a thematic linkage between these three games. We're going to be talking about a game that I have no idea what it is, but it's about online dating in a fantasy world, Cinder. Aaron's going to be bringing that to us. Ian's bringing us a truly terrible game that I'm dying to hear his perspective on. That is the Oregon Trail card game. And I'm going to be bringing us home with a little discussion on Horrified. So, Aaron, what's this weird game, Cinder?
All right. So, I mean, look, guys, you told me to bring a scary game, and the scariest thing I could think of as a married man in his 30s is trying to figure out online dating. So that's why I brought Cinder, and it is spelled, for those of you listening at home, it is C-I-N-D-R, just like the other popular dating app. And it is a game in which you are a character, not necessarily a person. You might be a unicorn or a goblin or perhaps even another dragon, and you're going on your Cinder app on your phone, and you're trying to hook up and date a dragon. This is at its core, it's a really simple game, and I don't say that as a negative point. Everyone at the start of the game is given a player card, which is this is you making your dating profile, and on your profile you will have you can put your name and your personal pronouns, your likes, your dislikes, but there's some columns of compatibility matches, and you're gonna circle one on each column, and that's kind of your default personality traits. And then there will be a deck of cards that look like telephone screens, and that is the dating profiles of all of the different dragons that you can potentially court in this game. And at the bottom will be a brief little narrative synopsis that'll tell you somewhat about the dragon and give you some kind of clue as to how you may personally align with this dragon. So you pick the dragon that you want to go on a date with, you flip the card over, and then on the back will be another compatibility chart with the spots pre-filled, and you get better or worse dice. There's three types of dice. Ones that have mostly hearts, ones that have an even mix, and then ones that have mostly flames. Because you're dating a dragon, obviously, you don't want to get burned. So the bad hearts roll a lot more flames. You roll too many flames, you've been burned. The date's over. MTV, next. So you pick your date. You pick a location that will add another modifier as well as potentially a bonus to your date. So you pick your date, you pick where you're going to go, you go on your date, you roll the dice according to your compatibility, and then from there you either decide, do you want to stop there and bank the hearts, bank your love meter, or do you want to press on and keep going to the next date, potentially even the next step.
Oh,
is what it's called in the rule book.
The next step. So, like real life, life dating, it's a push your luck game.
Yeah.
And increasingly dangerous rewards.
First date. So, and what's interesting is to keep you from just taking that first date, getting a couple quick points, and dipping, all of the dragons will have an ongoing benefit if they are in your dating pool. But in order to get that benefit, you have to at least go on the second date. Then they get added to your dating circle, and then you get the ongoing benefits. But because we're not married yet, right? This is all internet dating. None of this means we're not established with anybody here. You can snipe a date from somebody else. You can spend some of your love points that you've banked throughout the game and go on a date with somebody else's dating circle to try and get those bonuses and get those love points.
Oh, this is terrible.
It's a silly game about dating dragons themed after a dating app, and It's great. It's great because it's silly. It's simple. I mean, it's pressure luck. You roll some dice. Did I bust? Did I not? Do I keep going? What should I do? I think it's a wonderful little game. This is not something that your hardcore grognards are really going to mesh with, but if you've got some friends over who maybe you've played Catan, maybe you've played Carcassonne, you want to play something with a little bit more rules, but that isn't going to scare them off. I think this is great for that because
I
you're
like
rolling
that
a
you think this
fistful of
game is not
dice.
going to scare someone off.
It's a game about dating dragons, and if you're opposed to that, you're not in my friend circle, so I don't. You're already.
It is a very cutesy game. Is this like a solid game to play with kids, do you think? As just basically like a collecting game?
Yeah, I mean, mechanically, yes, because you're just making friends with the dragons. Obviously, you gotta retheme some things. There's not, you don't need to do a terrible amount of reading. There is a little bit of comprehension of, that it's got the little bio on the front that has some clues as to where their values may lie. So that may be something that you would have to help them make that judgment call. But mechanically, you figure out, do you match exactly? For each one, you get a green die. Are you one away? You get a yellow or a blue die. Are you two away? You get a red die. And then you roll your dice, pressure luck, see how it goes. So I think it's great. I think it's weird, but that's also part of why I think it's great. And that's my review of the scariest game in my collection, Cinder.
I would play this. I'm laughing about it. It does have like a, I mean, the theme like cringy? I don't know. I mean, is it any like
It
more?
doesn't ever lean too hard into it in a way that would make somebody uncomfortable playing the
Sure.
game. You can make those jokes while you're playing the
You
game,
can make it
but
weird.
within the game itself, it is just like you're just casually going on dates with dragons, and who doesn't want to do that?
I do like the dry erase little player boards where you get to come up with your name and
Oh, I'd have
like
fun with
what
that.
kind of character are you? Like I know Matt would have a great time with that. It kind of
Absolutely, I
does that
would.
little thing that a lot of these small box games do with the dry erase board is provide you with a reusable surface to make it less, massive and allow you to do
Oh,
stuff, which
man.
I think is fun.
Oregon Trail
More
comes
games
with a
should
dry
let
erase
you
board.
write your name on.
Oregon Trail does come with a
We
dry
were
erase
this close
board.
to a theme. If there was a dry erase
So
marker,
close.
being horrified. We're that close to a unifying theme. Best games with
Dry.
dry erase components.
I feel like if we were talking about best games with dry erase components,
We've
maybe
already
we
missed the
missed the
boat.
mark.
Yeah, we've already missed the boat. This is fun. I like it. I like a push your luck dice game, so I would definitely play this. And you know what? Kudos for thinking outside the box with a theme. How can we do something with dragons and elves and fantasy tropes and make it seem fresh and make it relevant? I think there's probably a certain segment of people that would probably pass over this because of the theme, and they're like, is it awkward or is it weird? But I love it. I love that you took a chance on it, and I think I would totally play this. It's got a low BGG, 6.6. That's like extremely mixed. That's like polarizing in the BGG numbers world.
And I can see why. I mean, it's definitely not for everyone, you know. Speaking of a game that does not have a stellar Board Game Geek score,
I actually want to know what it is now that you've mentioned that.
I am going to be bringing Oregon Trail. I'll let you discover that on your own. It's actually quite hilarious. I'm going to be talking about Oregon Trail, the card game. We did talk about this briefly. I can hear Matt has finally seen what it is. Matt, regale us
Oh,
with the
wow.
Board Game Geek
That's
score.
the lowest Board Game Geek score I've ever seen. I mean, most games in Board Game Geek world will genuinely bad games will taper off at about a low six or a high five. And that's basically there are people who will defend it. This game is 4.2, which that's pretty bad.
I just want to read one of the 10 reviews for it because there are few.
23 of them, to be exact.
Amazing game, a lot like Battlestar Galactica, except instead of a traitor, there's dysentery, and instead of reaching Kobol, everyone dies. 10 stars.
They do, and they just to die. This is, of course, a card game adaptation of that classic video game, The Oregon Trail. I am sure that you guys also wasted, you know, many hours playing Oregon Trail, seeing how far you could get, pushing your luck, trying to make it all the way to Oregon. Was it a good video game?
Yes.
I mean, that's debatable, you know?
Look, I am much older than both of you, and I can promise you that for a long stretch of human history, it was not just a good video game, it was one of the best.
It was the video game.
Yeah, especially in school.
I was just saying, because you got to play it in school.
When you
so
got
like
that like 30 minutes of computer time, and you go
there.
But
see, that's what I'm saying.
There's rose-tinted glasses.
You played it during time when you could be doing school. But you think, would you choose to play that game now over any of the games that you have? You'd play the game for 30 minutes, and then you go back to Slay the Spire.
I was going to say, I would play it, I would boot it up, and I would play it one time and be like, oh yeah, that's right, this game sucks.
And then you would die of dysentery. Yeah. So of course, the question really comes down to, how do you transfer this game into a satisfying card game? The answer is largely that you don't.
It sounds like they haven't figured that out yet.
So essentially, the way the game works is very similar to, you know, the way the video game works is you have trail cards that you will pull out, and the trail cards will require you to either try to cross a river, or you will try to, or you will potentially have to deal with a hazard that you will draw from the hazard deck. So the various, the hazards, you know, are range from a lot of different things, you know, whether they be, you know, there's not enough grass for your oxen, and so your oxen are going to die unless you have grass, or maybe somebody got sick and you have to have medicine, otherwise that person is going to die. And so everybody has a collection of supplies that you as a group are working towards that you are able to pool and try to make sure that you can, you know, deal with some of these issues. Like, for instance, if there's not enough grass, it doesn't matter immediately until you draw a second one. So you don't necessarily have to get rid of it right away. You might not want to waste your supplies on that. But if you don't and you get another one, then you're in trouble of dying. And, you know, how do you balance that? How do you approach that? You have to kind of work with the people around the table. So there is a little bit of play there. If you cross a river, sometimes you might accidentally lose supplies. You know how it works. It's pretty simple, honestly. That's basically the entire play of the game. You're going to draw a trail card. You either have to deal with a bad thing happening, or you're going to go ahead and cross a river and maybe lose some of your supplies. Every now and then you come onto a fort. You may rarely get supplies. It's generally a war of attrition where the game is going to slowly, slowly wear you down. The biggest issue that the game has, well, the two biggest issues that the game has, it's too long.
Yeah.
You have to go through, I think it's 50 trail cards that you have to draw to get to the end. That's a lot of trail cards. It's almost impossible to get there. I've almost gotten there once. I have played it quite a few times, more than probably it's justified, but I will come to the game's defense in a second. The
Are
other
you
issue
okay, Ian? Is someone making you play this?
They're here. They're in my house.
Blink twice if you need us to come get you.
The other issue is that, you know, that game mechanic that we all love, player elimination?
Yes.
What if that could happen without any input from you? What if there's no way to stop it and you just draw a card and you're dead? That's really fun, and we should definitely put that in the game. If you take those cards out, I honestly think the game jumps up a solid point and a half, you know, because not having player elimination just like that, as long as you can play around it, you know, it's not like it, you know, it's different than the video game, but it doesn't have to be like the video game. You know, you don't want to just, you know, there's multiple people around a table. You don't want to be the person that gets knocked out and all of a sudden everyone else is playing for another 10 minutes and you're just watching, because it's not a fun game to watch, honestly. Mm-hmm. So the player elimination part of it is definitely one of my biggest issues. I think the issue that a lot of people bounced off this game for, though, is, I mean, it's stupid fun, you know? I enjoyed playing it with some people and just trying to get as far as we could. Beating the game is not really the idea. You just want to have some fun, maybe drink some, you know, have a couple drinks. When you die, everyone has their names on, you know, the nifty little whiteboard, and on the back where your names, you also have tombstones. And so when somebody dies, you get to come up with a creative epitaph to put on their tombstone. And I mean, that's basically 75% of the fun, isn't it? You know, yeah. You get to decide what goes on that guy's gravestone. And so I think there's, I mean, it's not an expensive game. It's easy to pick up. I think it's honestly, I mean, like if you have a group of, you know, a group of friends that you can just have a stupid fun time with, I think it's potentially worth spending a little money on and just, you know, just give it a shot, play around with it, maybe tweak the rules a little bit. You don't have to play it exactly. There's a decent cooperative game built in there, but overall, I mean, this is probably one of the weakest things I have on my shelf. I haven't gotten rid of it just because it's so small, it doesn't really take up space, you know, which is another benefit to the game, is it's all cards, you know. You don't really need a lot of space to play, you don't need a lot of space to hold it. I have enjoyed my time playing it, but it is not the strongest game.
It's a terrible game. I own this game also. I'm looking at it right now. I think everyone owns this game. I think it multiplies in the night and forms other spawns other copies that creep out and find gamers and just worms its way into your collection. This game famously sold at Target. Name recognition and really good use of retro graphic color cover design, I think, just pulled a certain kind of like millennial gamer into like wanting to buy this. Like I was desperately wanting to play it because it just tugged on all of my nostalgia for the old video game. And there are moments when you're playing it when there's like, yeah, you're right, like there's the seeds of an interesting game in here. Like when a crisis comes out and everyone has to collaborate on like getting enough clothes to overcome the cold snap or whatever, It does feel like, oh, there could be a good game in here. But it's phenomenal. It's just pitched way too hard. Like, you have to go so far down the trail to survive that it's impossible to win. I would love to see somebody, I guess if I Google on YouTube, maybe there's a video of a Let's Play where somebody actually wins. I've never won it. I've never seen anybody win it. I would love to see somebody win it. I don't actually think it's mathematically impossible. That it's mathematically possible. Because you will inevitably encounter the instant death cards. And there's two kinds in there. There's dysentery. You got dysentery and it will kill you instantly. You can't recover from it. And snakebite. There's a couple of snakebite cards in there that are also instant. Yep. So there's two sets of cards that are in there that are instant death. And so the game is just a time bomb. It's not really a game. It's just there are the threats you can mitigate. And then it's just a time bomb before somebody gets one of the instant death. That's brutal. That kind of sucks.
It's rough. But that's another instance where, I mean, A, if you remove those cards, it's more fun because everyone can get a little bit involved. And also, the more people you have, the less those matter. If I'm playing with just me and my wife, one of us gets the dysentery card, all of a sudden we might as well not play anymore. Because why is my wife going to watch me draw cards and do things for another 10 minutes? That's stupid. You know, if you're playing with six people, one guy bites the dust, you know, gets bit by that snake, wanders too far into the grass. It doesn't really matter for your chances to win. You know, it's a little harder, but you still have a lot more chances. I'm not saying you'd want to play this with six people, you know, but I do think it's more fun with that many people, especially, you know, if you're just going to have more fun with it in general. So it's one of those games that does suffer from smaller player counts because it just, it's not scaled even remotely well.
And it's a weird choice to have a Beer and Pretzels game, which I think those are great games. They absolutely have a place and space in the market. Games where you're just going around, you're having fun, being goofy with your friends. But to have that sort of game where you can just be dead and then you're just done out of the game that quickly.
You could be dead on the first turn.
Right. And like one of the most popular Beer and Pretzels game, Red Dragon Inn, has player elimination. But people are eliminated usually towards the end of the game, and once somebody gets knocked out, that's almost like, you know, an end game trigger in a different game. You know, as soon as the first person gets knocked out, you are very close to the end of the game. So it is a weird choice to have something, like I said, where you can be knocked out almost immediately entirely by chance, and then maybe nobody else dies, and then maybe everyone else does it, and it turns out you were just the dead weight holding everyone back.
Yeah, I think my final thoughts on the game, and we've already probably spent more time on this than it really deserves to be talked about, but I think my final thoughts is it's funny talking about this game directly after talking about Stardew Valley, because one of our complaints with the Stardew Valley board game was that they tried to fit everything from the game in, and what they came out with was not something that felt like the original game.
Yeah.
This board game, they tried to cram everything in, and it came out too much like the original game. Whatever you might think about Oregon Trail, the video game, it does not work as a cooperative board game the exact way that it's designed.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I agree too. I would say too, just as a final thought, like should you get this game? I mean, is it worth a laugh? Look, I'm looking on Target's website. I think, or I'm pretty sure this is a Target exclusive. So if you're at Target and you're looking to spend in the neighborhood of $10 to $15 on a game, there are actually a lot of really good games at that price point that you could get. You could get Sushi Go for that. You could get
That's a fair
Bluffineers
point.
for that. You get a copy of Dutch Blitz for that. And that's even, you know.
These are all good games.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to say, like, should you get it? You know, only if you are looking for just a silly game that you're all going to laugh at and nobody's going to win. And it's just, if you really earnestly feel like it's the right fit for your crowd. But otherwise, it's a truly broken. One of the only like truly broken I think board games that's out there and like popular still being like popularly sold. I think there's it's actually kind of good that you brought this up because this is like nobody needs to buy this on a lark unless you know what you're getting into. It's truly it's just borderline unplayable.
Now moving on to a game that is actually scary. Matt, I know you wanted to talk about Horrified.
The titular after Matt's reaction to both of our titles that we brought.
Yeah. With an act. No, your game looked good. I was surprised. I was prepared to like hate Cinder, but now I kind of want to play Cinder. Oregon Trail is just like, man, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about that. But
I mean, is it
Horrified.
worth playing? Is it worth playing once at a friend's house to have played it, or is it even?
If
All
you're
right,
a
we have talked that game to death. Let us move on
All
to
right, all right,
Horrified.
all
Too
right.
much about
Yeah.
Oregon Trail. It's Matt,
Too much about Oregon
what is
Trail.
Horrified? What's the deal with it?
What is it? Horrified is a game that I've been wanting to talk about for a while because I think this is a bold statement, but I think I'm prepared to say it. I think it's my favorite cooperative game, full stop,
Ooh.
these days.
Wow. I mean,
I really do.
that's
I've been playing
actually
a lot of
that's
Horrified
big from
lately.
you. You have a lot of
Oh,
cooperative
I
games.
play a ton of cooperative games. I love cooperative games. And I have a theory. It's actually going to fit really well with the Oregon Trail discussion about why. Because it's all about difficulty pitch to me, is the thing that I'm realizing is so important in cooperative games. They've got to thread this perfect needle. And I think Horrified just about does it just right. So, what is the game? All right, well, I'm going to give you a quick synopsis. The village is under attack by the classic universal monsters, the Wolfman, the Invisible Man, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, Dracula, and Mr. and Mrs. Frankenstein are all on the loose. And you play investigator types, town folks who are going to try to save the day. And to do that, you have to play out a unique mini game associated with each monster and then defeat that monster. So, for example, to defeat the creature from the Black Lagoon, you need to go down to the swamp and take a boat down into the labyrinth and of the swamp and find its lair before you can actually damage the creature from the Black Lagoon. Or for the Wolfman, you need to try to make a cure by going to the lab and combining ingredients to try to cure the break the curse. Or for Dracula, you need to move around the town and find all of his coffins and destroy them before you can actually take him out. So each monster has a unique set of like objectives and goals that play out on a sideboard like a little mini game. that you have to accomplish before the monster's even vulnerable. The core gameplay loop, though, is just running around the town, collecting items from locations, and then turning them in differing color and item combinations to accomplish these goals. So to like advance on the track when you're trying to move the boat forward, you need to turn in certain colored items when you're on the creature's lair, or to make the, you know, the serum that you need to cure the wolfman. You have to turn in items in different color combinations. And then to defeat a monster, to finally defeat them, you might need like 3 red items with a numerical value of 6 or higher to actually damage Dracula and all this stuff. So it's basically a simple set collection game that you use to complete in-game objectives, all the while you're having to mitigate all the risk associated with the monsters. They can attack you on their activation phase. They can attack and devour villagers, and all of this stuff increases the terror level. And when the terror level gets too high, you lose. There's light asymmetric play. Every player character has a unique power that comes into play. You unlock cool cards that you can use on your turn or on your one of the other players' turns to help. And the whole thing is tight, fast, and really, really well designed. For a long time, I glossed over this game as being probably not great because I saw that it was licensed, you know, Universal Studios stuff. And I was like, yeah, this is probably, how good could this really be? Don't sleep on this one. If you like cooperative games, I think this is one of the best ones. If you like spoopy games, if you want something with a monster theme that's fun to get to the table around Halloween, I think this is tremendous, although it's not particularly scary if you're looking for that. But it is very thematic in the sense of like the monsters are on the move and danger is afoot. It's just a really, really good game. Aaron, have you played this one?
I have. It's been a little while, but I have played it. I really, really love how completely differently the monsters play from one another. I mean, it is not a game where, you know, you have the boss fight at the end and this one attacks for more damage, this one has a higher shield stat that you have to overcome. Like, each one wants you to do something wildly different from the next one. You know, sometimes you may have to go visit specific locations in a specific order to turn on the power back at the house, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Some of them, I think it was Frankenstein, you actually have to kite back to or away from the Bride of Frankenstein, because every time they meet, something happens.
Yes.
So you have to intentionally put yourself close enough to them to make them move in a different pattern than they would if no one was really, like, you can't ignore them. You have to stay close to them and put yourself in range of danger of them, which is so cool. And I, you know, and it's, they simplify the, you know, gathering different items and all that. It is just like, it is basically you get a chip that has a color and a number.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like a gun or an umbrella or, you know, whatever thing it is. But it simplifies that, so that's not getting in the way of trying to figure out what all the different items that you're gathering are and what they do. It's their colors and numbers. Some things need colors or numbers or both. But the real draw of it to me is just how cool the monsters are and how different they are and how well they work.
That's really what makes the game great. I've got a few thoughts on what makes the game great, but what makes the game really special is that every monster is its own unique minigame. And the way you set the game up is you pick any combination of 2 or more monsters to basically make the game what you want it to be. So you pick, today we're doing Dracula and the Wolfman, or we're going to do Invisible Man and Frankenstein, or we'll do 3, and that'd be nuts. That modular ability to kind of set the game up in the way you want it in a unique combination makes each game feel totally fresh and different, because not only is the way you defeat each monster its own separate mini game and different, but the monsters behave and act actually surprisingly different from each other. Like the Invisible Man runs around the town. He's a thief, so he's stealing piles of items that you need to complete this objective. He's stealing crap from around the board, which is stressful and annoying. The Wolfman goes on these like blitz attacks where if you have the hunter's mark on you and he comes to your space, he's going to like wail on everybody and do tons of damage. So he's terrifying. And then Dracula warps around the board. Like you can be completely away from him and he like poofs into a cloud of smoke and comes to where you're at. So you never can completely get away from Dracula. So all of the monsters just feel different. The objectives you're trying to complete around the board are all very unique and fun. The mummy has this unique mechanic where you have to like break the curse by solving this sliding tile puzzle that you set up off to the side. It's so cool. It's so different. So just the fresh quality of each game feeling a little different is something great. But the reason that I like it and why this is standing out in my mind as a great cooperative game is really something you touched on. Is one is its simplicity and its presentation and its rules. So many cooperative games are so complex. I think about teaching someone to play Horrified compared to teaching somebody to play like Dead of Winter. Dead of Winter is like a 30-minute teach, and you're going to get a rule wrong that's crucial because it's a really hard game. I can teach you to play, believe it or not, you basically know how to play Horrified. Yeah. If you've heard me rambling about
based
it.
Based on what you've said so far. That's
there's nothing to it. It's move and do a series of basic actions. Your player tutorial that I'll sit beside you, your little card that says what you can do in your turn, is basically you've learned to play the game when you've read that card. It's the easiest game. The graphic design of the components, like you said, I mean, it's easy to wrap your mind around, oh, I need blue stuff. Here's a pile of blue items. I need numbers. I need items with like these number values on them. It's just everything's easy to parse. It's easy to pick up. I've taught this game to a lot of different people, and within like a turn, you're just playing it, and now you're making tactical decisions instead of having to remember like, okay, what's the movement rule for this thing. But the thing that I think really makes it great, puts it over the top in my mind, is it threads that needle of difficulty. Which is a great contrast to the Oregon Trail. So Oregon Trail is grave sin, and not only does it have instant death, it's impossible. It's too hard. You can't win it. But this is a game, not only can you win Horrified, you'll probably win it about 40 to 50% of the time, which is just right. If you win a cooperative game too often, it's really boring, because then it's just like, let's just set this up and move the pieces around and put it away. Like, we're going to win it. Like, you know what I mean? There needs to be some tension. But if you lose it every time, then it's like, I don't want to drag this out because they're just going to like lose. Like Pandemic is a game that's like a little bit of a bummer to bring out sometimes, because you're just like, well, that's a lot of cubes to have to like pile up around the board to just like lose in an hour. But this is a game that you have a good chance of winning. I think threading that difficulty of being challenging, but giving you like hero moments where you actually feel awesome and you pull off a close victory, that's what makes this game really great. So I think this is awesome. I highly recommend it.
All right. So that's our episode. A very loosely thematically tied three games. Hopefully there's one that sounds interesting to you. Of course, we always really do appreciate you listening to the podcast. Do consider maybe giving the podcast a follow or leave a review. It is always great to see people interact. And of course, if people want to get in touch with us, Matt, where can they do that?
You can find us on Instagram at Dice Pirates, where we post about the games we're playing and give little updates and mini reviews all throughout the week. And we would love to hear from you. And I'm going to make a special appeal. I'm going to deviate from my usual end of the episode script and say, if you have been listening with us for a while, which we appreciate, so many of you, we took a huge break and came back with like no announcement and got a bunch of downloads that episode. So you guys have like hung in there and stayed subscribed to the show. So if you are listening right now to my voice rambling, we really appreciate it. And so I would love for you to tell a friend who likes board games to give it a listen. I think we're sort of at the phase with our time investment in this where word of mouth is going to help it grow more than anything. So if you like the Dice Pirates, tell a friend that they should give the Dice Pirates a listen, that you'd be doing us a solid.
We will be back soon with another episode, so stay tuned for that. But of course, until then, we will be right here on the Dice Pirates.
Play more games.